Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Mario Ritter and Anna Mateo. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Mario Ritter.
Development projects in the Philippines may increase competition between South Korea and China. Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte is seeking partners to develop his country, which is in need of improved roads, ports, and railways to attract investment. South Korean President Moon Jae-in appealed to members of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations this month at its meeting in Manila. He told members, including the Philippines, that his country was the best partner to share the experience of economic growth. South Korea is offering to help with technology projects, railways, clean energy development, and water management. The Philippines wants to attract development assistance. Since Duterte took office last year, the country has increasingly turned to China. China promised $24 billion in aid in October of 2016. Earlier this month, China and the Philippines signed 14 economic cooperation agreements, including one on railways. In October, Japan's Prime Minister Shinzo Abe announced $8.8 billion in economic support. South Korea does not want to lose ground in the Southeast Asian nation of more than 100 million people. Herman Kraft is with the University of the Philippines, Diliman. He says that the United States, Japan, and South Korea traditionally have worked together in the region. I think one of the things that Korea might actually be concerned about right now is, of course, in a similar groove with Japan. They'd like to make sure that the Philippines doesn't just turn around in terms of its relationship with the United States. Duterte improved relations with China last year. He eased tensions with China after about 4 years of disputes related to territory in the South China Sea. China claims almost all of the South China Sea as its territory. The Philippines claims many land formations and islands in the eastern part of the sea. At the same time, Duterte appeared to seek less American support of his country's armed forces. This month, local media reported that South Korea offered $1.7 billion in credit and financial aid to help the Philippines. The money, the report said, was aimed at developing transportation and energy projects. Duterte is seeking $167 billion to build public infrastructure, such as roads, rail lines, ports, and power centers. But the Philippines needs foreign investment. Manila's seaport, for example, is crowded. Electricity costs in the country are high for the region. Also, the Philippines has few railways to link cities on its larger islands. The Philippine National Economic and Development Authority keeps records of development aid in the country. The agency says that South Korea provided more than $600 million in aid to the Philippines in 2013. Song Seng-woon is an economist specializing in Southeast Asia with the Internet Banking Group, CIMB, in Singapore. He said South Korea wants its aid efforts to lift its national brand. Chinese brands could become competitors in the Philippine market, where South Korean electronic household machines and other products are popular. Consumer spending is an increasingly important part of the Philippine economy, which grew 6.9% in 2016. The total value of trade between South Korea and the Philippines increased from $10 billion in 2011 to $13.4 billion in 2014. South Korean leaders hope to increase ties with Southeast Asian countries to avoid investing too much in China. Problems with over-investing in China became clear earlier this year. South Korean companies faced boycotts and other problems in China, and the number of Chinese travelers dropped sharply. I'm Mario Ritter.
This is What's Trending Today. Britain's Prince Harry and American actress Meghan Markle are getting married. Harry's father, Prince Charles, made the announcement in a statement Monday. It read, "His Royal Highness the Prince of Wales is delighted to announce the engagement of Prince Harry to Ms. Meghan Markle." The statement said the wedding will take place next spring. It added that Harry and Markle became engaged in London earlier this month. Markle is best known for her work in the television show Suits. She is also a global ambassador for World Vision Canada, which campaigns for better education, food, and health care for children around the world. Markle's parents released a statement saying, "We are incredibly happy for Meghan and Harry. Our daughter has always been a kind and loving person. To see her union with Harry, who shares the same qualities, is a source of great joy for us as parents." Harry's brother, Prince William, and his wife, Kate, welcomed Markle to the royal family. They said in a statement, "We are very excited for Harry and Meghan. It has been wonderful getting to know Meghan and to see how happy she and Harry are together." Prince Harry will become the first member of the British royal family to marry an American actor. The Prince and Markle briefly appeared before photographers Monday at Kensington Palace. Harry said he was thrilled and said details about how he asked Markle to marry him will come out later. When asked if the proposal was romantic, he answered, "Of course it was." And that's what's trending today.
From VOA, Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. One in every 160 children worldwide has some form of autism spectrum disorder, also called ASD. This estimate comes from the United Nations World Health Organization. The National Institutes of Health in the United States says the term ASD is the name for a group of developmental disorders. It includes a wide mix of symptoms, skills, and levels of disability. People with ASD often have social problems that include difficulty communicating and interacting with other people, repetitive behaviors, as well as limited interests or activities. Symptoms that are often recognized in the first 2 years of life. Symptoms that hurt the individual's ability to deal with others socially, at school or work, or in other areas of life. Experts at the National Institutes of Health also explain that ASD begins in childhood and usually continues into adulthood. In order to make the best decisions for an autistic child, parents must sort through a large amount of clinical research. Even with all that information, there are many unanswered questions about the causes of ASD and how to treat it. Betsy Fields is a mother of two sons with autism. She plans each day with them down to the minute. Even a short walk is a rare chance to think and gather strength to continue raising two boys considered special or different by society. Fields says her boys may be different from other people, but they are no less important. This is the idea behind a book called Different, Not Less. The writer is a woman who has autism.
Different, Not Less is a saying from a really famous autistic woman, Temple Grandin. She became famous because of autism, and that's one of her sayings in her book, Different, Not Less.
In both of her sons, Fields discovered they had autism when they were 2 years old. For her first child, Hunter, doctors gave her hope. They thought a delay in his ability to speak resulted from the fact that Hunter was learning two languages, English and Spanish, at the same time.
He had some signs of autism, but not all of them. Like he didn't line up things, and his eye contact was good. He was happy. It didn't seem like it was autism. It seemed like more of a delay. Mm-hmm. And then with my other son, I kind of knew what to look for. Even though you know it's there, you're like, oh my gosh, how are you going to deal with it?
In the United States, millions of parents face the same question. Researchers estimate that in the U.S., one in 68 children has autism. Boys are more likely than girls to have ASD. Many states employ therapeutic and inclusion experts in public school systems. They work with children with ASD and help them to become part of the school community. Chris Lacovero is one such expert. She says that the symptoms of autism can differ greatly from person to person. Lacovero notes that many people with autism have difficulty communicating with others.
The communication is difficult. Socialization is difficult. So those are the most typical things about individuals with autism, but again, the characteristics can really range. You and I right now are hearing each other. an individual with autism might hear this light that's on. They might hear the rotating of the camera and the fan that's on and me shaking my foot sometimes and someone walking out there, all at the same noise level. That's got to be very overwhelming.
Betsy Fields says she does not want her children to attend too many after-school therapy programs. She told VOA they get all the development classes they need within the school.
Just because they're autistic, I don't think that we should stop living. You know, we go swimming and I try to get them involved with that. Do typical things of what other kids do.
Today in the United States, most children with autism study in schools with other children. Depending on their abilities, an autistic child attends special needs classes or traditional classes with other children. Betsy Fields says she is happy with the quality of education. Her sons study with other neighborhood children at the local public school. John Donvan wrote the book, In a Different Key, The Story of Autism. He says there is no simple solution for treating autism, and the causes of the disorder remain unclear. He adds that for many parents, the most important thing is to not try to change a child. It is important to accept the child as he or she is.
Parents I know who have had children with autism for a long time have usually reached a point where they have accepted who their child is as that child is. When the children are younger, a lot of them, it's not that they don't recognize it, although some don't want to go for a diagnosis they're scared to. It's more that they say, I'm going to save my child from this. It really does change a parent's life. Not every parent wants their life to be changed right away. But in time, I've seen many come to accept it.
Fields calls these years the most difficult in her life. But her role as a parent of autistic sons is to never compare them to others. She says she accepts them as they are. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Ana Mateo.
From VOA Learning English, this is The Making of a Nation, American History in Special English. I'm Steve Ember. This week in our series, we complete the story of the American Revolution. The time is December 1776. British General William Howe has decided to stop fighting during the cold winter months. The general is in New York. He has already established control of a few areas near the city, including Trenton and Princeton in New Jersey. General George Washington and the Continental Army are on the other side of the Delaware River. The Americans are cold and hungry. They have few weapons. Washington knows that if Howe attacks, the British will be able to go all the way to Philadelphia.
He's looking at his army, which is melting away.
Historian Gordon Wood says that moment was the low point of the war for George Washington.
And he decides to make one great effort on Christmas night and crosses the Delaware, dead of winter, cold, ice, and he crosses and attacks Trenton, where you have about 1,000 Hessians who are kind of overwhelmed and defeated. It's a small tactical victory, but a great psychological effect, because it's the first time that Washington had actually done something positive, and it really does, I think, change the psychology of the war.
Another result of the victory at Trenton was that more men decided to join the army. It now had 10,000 soldiers. This new Continental Army, however, lost battles during the summer to General Howe's forces near the Chesapeake Bay. And in August 1777, General Howe captured Philadelphia. Following these losses, Washington led the army to the nearby area of Pennsylvania called Valley Forge.
Valley Forge was the camp where George Washington and his army spent a really miserable, miserable winter.
Alice Camps is a curator at the National Archives in Washington, where some of the country's most important documents are kept. One of those documents is a letter that George Washington wrote from Valley Forge.
The men had nothing to wear. They had no blankets. They had very little to eat. Illnesses were rampant. It was a very, very miserable experience for them.
But in the middle of that winter, Washington finds out that France has decided to sign a treaty with the colonists.
This is fantastic news. This is the kind of news that would make anyone just run about screaming with joy and doing handstands. But Washington is so reserved, and he says that he's received this news with, quote, the most sensible pleasure, unquote.
He also says he is going to wait for the government to approve the treaty before he tells the army.
The fact that he is not going to announce this news immediately to his army speaks to the fact that he was always, always concerned with doing the right thing and with protocol.
By the spring of 1778, General Washington and his army were ready to fight again. General Howe was still in Philadelphia. His behavior as a military leader was sometimes difficult to understand. At times, he was a good commander and a brave soldier. At other times, he stayed in the safety of cities instead of leading his men in battle. The next series of important battles in the American Revolution was led by another British general, John Burgoyne. His plan was to capture the Hudson River Valley in New York State and separate New England from the other colonies. Doing this, the British believed, would make it easier to capture the other colonies. The plan did not succeed. American General Benedict Arnold defeated the British troops in New York. General Burgoyne had expected help from General Howe, but that help never came. Burgoyne was forced to surrender at the town of Saratoga. The American victory at Saratoga was extremely important. It ended the British plan to separate New England from the other colonies. It also showed European nations that the Americans might be able to win their revolution. This was something that France especially had wanted ever since being defeated earlier by the British in the French and Indian War. The French government had been supplying the Americans secretly through the work of America's minister to France, Benjamin Franklin. Franklin was popular with the French people and with French government officials. He helped gain French sympathy for the American cause. After the American victory at Saratoga, the French decided to enter the war on the American side. The two nations signed military and political treaties. Historian Gordon Wood says this alliance created bigger problems for the British.
Because once the French were involved, it turns the thing from counterinsurgency for the British. They're now fighting a world war.
The British immediately sent a message to America's Continental Congress. They offered to go back to a time of better relations. The Americans rejected the British offer. The war would be fought to the end. In 1779, Spain entered the war against the British. And the next year, the British were also fighting the Dutch to stop their trade with America. The French now sent gunpowder, soldiers, officers, and ships to the Americans. However, neither the Americans nor the British made much progress in the war for the next 2 years. By 1780, the British had moved their military forces to the American South. They quickly gained control of South Carolina and Georgia. But the Americans prevented them from taking control of North Carolina. After that, the British commander moved his troops to Yorktown, Virginia. The commander's name was Lord Charles Cornwallis. Both he and George Washington had about 8,000 troops when they met near Yorktown. Cornwallis was expecting more troops to arrive on British ships. What he did not know was that French ships were on their way to Yorktown too. Their commander was Admiral François Comte de Grasse. De Grasse met some of the British ships that Cornwallis was expecting and defeated them. The French ships then moved into the Chesapeake Bay near Yorktown. The Americans and the French began attacking the British with cannons. Then they fought the British soldiers hand to hand. Cornwallis knew he had no chance to win without more troops. He surrendered to George Washington on October 17, 1781. The war was over. American and French forces had captured or killed half of the British troops in America. The surviving troops left Yorktown playing a popular British song called "The World Turned Upside Down." How were the Americans able to defeat the most powerful nation in the world? Historians give several reasons. The Americans were fighting at home, while the British had to bring troops and supplies from across the ocean. British officers made mistakes, especially General William Howe. His slowness to take action at the start of the war made it possible for the Americans to survive two difficult winters. Historian Gordon Wood at Brown University in Rhode Island says the British also thought more colonists would support them.
When Burgoyne comes down the Hudson Valley, he starts out with an army of 10,000 or so, and he has to hack his way through the woods, and he keeps losing troops to small militia. He counted on more loyalist support than there was, and I think the British miscalculated terribly on that point.
Another reason the Americans won was the help they received from the French. Also, the British public had stopped supporting the long and costly war. Finally, America might not have won without the leadership of George Washington. He never gave up hope.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.